Just in and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Gonna fuck up his bag.
I can't fuck his bag.
Yeah, it's going now. But yeah, it's funny because like, there's also all these businesses like, man, I'm looking for black artists, and then I'll like DM them, and they're like, oh, thanks for the suggestion. I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean? I just told you I'm here.
I caught your bluff, nigga. Fuck that. Hey, you said you're looking for it.
That's
here
shit
I've
been seeing on Twitter, like, yo, link me to the black creative. It's like it's the same people you've been robbing from for years. Like, what where do you mean? Think where do you think you started talking like this? Like, you magically started speaking like this? Like,
right.
Come on, dude. Like,
it's so ridiculous.
It's funny. It's
like, we're the black entertainer. Nigga, the same ones you've been stealing shit from since what? Elvis?
Yeah, what? Did fuck Jerry have anything to say when this started?
Of course not. I don't know. I don't even look at that shit anymore, but them dudes, like, come on, man. And after getting exposed, it's still like, well, people are just like, oh, they're convenient, so I'm just going to stay there.
Right.
Like, come on. Have some real taste. Seek out, you know, the people that are actually making this shit, but it is what it is. I can't be mad.
I mean, as long as you pay. It's hard to be mad when you make a lot of money. That's why like the older generation in us is like never that upset. They're like, "Ah, well, I mean, like my mom is basically like Stephen A. Smith, who just has like all the wrong takes that like were good like 30 years ago. Maybe not even good 30 years ago, just like, yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like every time Stephen A. starts a sentence with, as a black man, he says something that no black person agrees with.
Yeah, exactly.
None.
And he gets canceled a lot, but I think he's making the most of ESPN, if I'm not tripping.
He's making the most. That's why. Jemele Hill had to call into Highly Questionable this morning to do a phone interview, you know what I mean? Like,
because of the ESPY. I didn't even watch the ESPYs last night, but apparently they were doing a lot of black stuff that wasn't really usual based on how they've treated some of their black talent and the exodus that's been going on the low, but that's kind of, you know, not
So wait, was the ESPYs on?
Apparently there was the ESPYs award show, but it's not. But you know, like when the ESPYs come to LA, LA's turned up, so it's exciting. Like this year, just I think they just did it to get it over with. So they kind of realized they could do it whenever they want.
But they didn't even promote it or anything. I watch ESPN every morning. I didn't know it was coming.
I feel like this was a year where they just handed out the awards and got it going. Yeah, there wasn't really like the spectacle part of it.
But they did some spectacle shit. Like, I guess there's a video. I saw like at least a video of like a bunch of white people. Like, you know what? Okay, I don't know when this became a trend, but it's like where like everyone reads the same script.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and together.
Fam,
we can.
That shit is so stupid. It's already been talked about so much, so I'm not going to add on too long. But if you don't get the fuck out of my face, I acknowledge that I'm the problem. Shut the fuck up.
Like I said, this white guild don't mean anything unless there's a bag attached to it, so I'm not really. Like all the black squares and the sorries and all that type of shit, that's great. Where's the bag? Where's the bag and where's the improvement within your company? Because I'm seeing a lot of cats getting exposed now. It's good to see because a lot of companies been on some fuck shit for a long time.
Yeah.
So it's good to see everybody's kind of, you know, the employees that were grieved, like, you know, you're seeing brands where, like, black women are stepping up and saying companies that have profited off of black culture are, you know, sitting there on some bullshit. So this is going to keep happening. I think hopefully it'll lead to some real changes, but my fear is that it's going to reverse and the white people start to get salty and be like, well, I'm not like that, and then they're going to try and flip it back on us again.
I mean, that's like exactly what's... We were just talking about that, like, right before you got in here. Because, you know, we do the improv at UCB.
Okay.
The UCB CFO...
Lemon Pepper Wet?
Lemon Pepper Wet, for sure. But the UCB CFO put out a... What do you mean? No one gets paid for improv.
Y'all better take that and go slang a show, and that's how that whole thing works, right?
That is true. Right, I mean, hopefully. I don't know. I just started doing it for fun. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I had no plans in this.
That's where I got onto Twitter. That's why I do everything. But now, fun is a lot of bags for mediocre humans, so I'm going to go ahead and get mine, too, because they have fun too. They be really getting it. So,
fam, that has really been my argument. Was like you said, all this virtue signaling and performance art is cool. Are you giving niggas checks? It's about time some mediocre motherfuckers get some checks, because y'all been doing it for a long time. Hey,
oh my god, really
long time. Not just the most exceptional Negroes. I mean, a normal nigga. Give him a job he don't deserve.
I mean, that's the thing, too. That's what I'm afraid of, because I feel like, you know, they're just going to start buying up anything. You're going to get a lot of mediocre shit that comes out that's not really going to reflect well on the black community. Then they're going to be like, oh, well, look, we gave you niggas a chance. Now it's like, hey, you know, back to what we used to do. Yeah. So I'm hoping they're just like, you know, let actually really talented people give them the resources, because they be putting, you know, $100 million, $200 million just fucking flops out. Like, we only need like five. I be seeing shit that get like $1 billion just flopping. Like, yo, give me a mil, I'm going to flip that and turn that to 10. Like, it's not complicated.
Yeah.
Just make sure people want to watch, but actually get it to the streets.
So the question is, if you were still doing, if Legends of Chamberlain Heights was in its first season right now and you were working on season two, how different do you think the show would be, or do you think it would be exactly the same?
I think it would be fucked, because like the writers' rooms are kind of like, I was in a writers' room at the beginning of the year, and then we went virtual in March, and it's like, that shit is hard. It's not for the creative process, and just sitting at a Zoom and looking at a Zoom for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours at a time. It's not really like, you know, we're sitting here now, we're social distance, but we can all just rap off each other and feel each other's energy and whatever. Just at least like the best ideas and shit. But so I'm a little nervous about it, because honestly, like, the rooms are like the funnest part. Like, that's kind of like. You know, you can do whatever you want in the room. Like, say whatever you want. It's honest, acceptable, as long as it's in a respectful way and it's funny and it's about whatever you're talking about in terms of the script. You know, so I'm just curious to see how that pans out. But I think we would have figured it out, but we would have had a lot of fun. Like, if I was still making videos and shit for Legend, I would have been killing this whole time doing character videos, response videos, and all that type of shit. So. Right.
I guess I mean, like, more with the actual content. Or do you think, like, I guess because you guys did the second season, which was excellent.
Appreciate you.
And then it wasn't renewed, and there was a bunch of bullshit that was attached to why it wasn't renewed. You also couldn't like take the show with you. You couldn't move it anywhere else. So just
maybe. I mean, look, the thing is, like, the Comedy Central gave us 2 seasons. I really appreciate it. It's funny now to see when that show came out versus what the climate is in this day and age. I think it would have had a lot more success, because people would have watched it. We really would have hit this shit hard in kind of a way that nobody else could really do from an animated standpoint at this point. You know, we'll see when Boondocks comes back on HBO Max with their own. I imagine they're going to be on some real life, like, just really go out and get it type shit.
For the fences,
you know, right? Just got to go hit homers, but you just never know. So I think we would have really been killing it. You know, it would have been a good time. But that white gill, like I said, is really like, you can just really see it. You can really just feel it in the air now. It's funny. It's funny to see.
That's funny, because Comedy Central has a history of not, like, supporting their art. They don't want South Park to be successful. They're just like, it's there. Because they have an idea of what they are, you know what I mean? More so than the shit that the people connect with.
I mean, it's hard. Look, you're talking about 15, 20 shows a year you're trying to get out, and really just the landscape you're competing with now with the streaming or whatever. It's really like... Like I think like Netflix and other spots, what they really capitalize on is they're on digital and social heavy. Like, they've been on these streets, like they got all this, you know, they're doing shit. But you, like, even like Rick and Morty getting the Szechuan sauce at McDonald's, like, they're doing shit that's really tapping into the culture, and now it's coming into real life, and people are like going to McDonald's to go get the Szechuan sauce. Yeah. You know, just shit like that, where it's like, yo, this is next level. This is where the show now transcends being just a TV show, and it's pop culture, and it's art, and it's the world. People love it. Yeah. You know, you're seeing dudes wear like Rick and Morty socks during games or whatever. Maybe, you know, that's their featured shoe when the NFL lets them do shit. So I think stuff like that, but it's hard. It's a crapshoot. Like, you just never know, because there's a lot of great shows that don't make it every year.
Facts.
And it's just, you know, really what it comes down to, what I always tell creators or people that sell shows is like, yo, you're gonna have to really take it to the concrete if you want your shit to hit. Like, like, it's not, you know, they're gonna have an advertising budget and all that, but people are so used to being promoted to. You drive around LA, you see billboards for all kinds of shit. That don't mean I'm gonna watch it. Like, I'm just,
wait,
you know.
That leads me to a question I have for both of y'all, because Chris is a writer too, and I've never written nary a script in my life.
You know, right? I thought you wrote. I thought you.
I haven't written anything. I did a deck that was received well, and then Corona hit, and it kind of just got stalled. But
I know that project, and that was a good project.
Yeah. I think that I was thinking the other day, because I was watching Zoolander, and I love Zoolander, and I was like, okay, this could also have been very trash, but it isn't. I don't know why. I don't know what the formula is, but it made me wonder, when you get a script out, do people know it's trash like early? Like, at what point? There's a trash movie. People are like, this is trash.
No, see.
Is it like after the editing? Yeah. Or like,
I'm going to let you guess. So you can take that. Right, but.
So look. I mean, every project is different. That's all I can say. Like, every project can run into their own different shit. Like, the script might be killer on the page, then you get out and try to make it, and however the if the vision's not the same or whatever, like, you're dealing with a lot of shit. A lot of times, writers selling scripts, and then they're giving it to the team that they best think can execute it, and maybe their visions aren't aligned, and that's just like, they don't see the vision, they're gonna fuck it up. But there's no, because I watch a lot of shit on TV, and I'm just like, damn, this shit is trash. Like, how'd it get to this point? But at some point, it was a really good idea. Now, as outside figures become involved, and kind of what I like to call, like, the merchants kind of jump in and start, putting their two cents in, you can't do this, you can't say that, whatever, whatever. Shit's changed. Sometimes it's for the better, sometimes it's for the worse. So it's really just, there's so many factors that can go into it. You never really, like, I can't be like, oh, this is the formula to make a shitty show, because nobody would do that if that was the case. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, everybody goes and thinking like, oh yeah, we did. This is the shit. This is gonna hit.
The real thing is that every good TV show, movie, cartoon, whatever, is a miracle, because it's so lucky, bro. There's so many people. People always want to act like it's just four people, like, involved in making something, the director, the writer, and those act. There are so many fucking people involved, and it's like, once you start adding in the people who are doing the money, they have notes. So once you have notes, your thing is changing. Everyone's talking about a whole nother, it's just a whole bunch of shit, and sometimes those notes work, and sometimes they fuck you, and now you're like, oh, what you want? Now, so you get Zoolander 2.
When we get to the money people, then, you're not talking about financiers. You're talking about, like, executive producers and shit like that.
Like, I mean, look, if you sell, say you sell a TV show, for example, you sell to a network, Netflix, whoever, you're dealing with execs on that side that are giving you notes, developing the show with you, whatever. So you may have a wild, zany idea, and they may be like, nah, you can't do that, dog, because of whatever. Host 100 reasons. Just, you never know. Like, what other, like Turner, for example, you probably couldn't do a show where you're shitting on the NBA. Just, you wouldn't get that on any Turner platform, TBS, TNT. So now it's like, who's relationship with who? Who's doing shit? HBO now is probably into that fold. So if you look at, just depending on what your content is, you might have the greatest show idea ever, and they just be like, nah, we can't fuck with that, dog, because that's going to fuck up our NBA bag or NFL bag.
Yeah.
Like, look at a show like Ballers. Ballers is kind of like, it is what it is. I'm just saying, it doesn't really get heavy into whatever it is, so they can still, but so HBO can still do other shit involved with the NFL, but a lot of the time it's like relationships they don't want to fuck up, so you got to be mindful of that. Sometimes your show might not be big enough. Like South Park at Comedy Central, they can do whatever the fuck they want because their show is big enough. Right. Like, they run shit.
Yeah.
So if we want to go at Kanye or whoever, and that's going to fuck up Viacom shit with MTV Awards or whatever down the line. Take it. Like, we can get that off. It's South Park.
We got Tonys, we got Oscars, we got Grammy. What you want? My resume.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
It gets complex when you really get into those, like, ooh, we can't piss off this actor and this agent who represents this person that we're trying to sign a deal with for this show that we like more than this one or whatever. At the end of the day, it's all bags, but it's like, them taking calculated risks.
Okay, one more question on this topic then. Because it sounds like, at least when I hear you guys, it sounds more like taking chances and stuff like that, where you get noted, is more of a comedy thing. But if you're writing drama, there's so many ways to not step on anybody's toes in drama, but it's still trash.
No, it's not. It's the same thing. You're focusing on notes, and you think notes is like change.
I have to imagine it has to be notes being the.
No, it can be like, this is shot is too long and too graphic. This has been the way they say this thing is insulting to this here demographic that we're trying to target this movie toward. There's little tiny minutia, like PR, like R&D things that can change idea so much that it's basically not even the same thing anymore.
It's an interesting thing, because you're hearing the word notes, and what does that really mean? But notes can be like, oh, like you saying, change this punchline to like, oh, rip this whole script up and start over from scratch.
Right.
And they'll both be like, one sentence long.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. It's a note.
Then they'll go into detail, but it's still like the core of what you're looking at, what you're bolding is like, yeah, we're not, however they say it politely, they're not going to be like, oh, Rod, your shit's trash. They'll just be like, oh, we're not really vibing with it, whatever.
Yeah.
It's clunky, it's whatever. Whatever the, like, the agent speak is, I'm always the type like, yo, do you want it or not? Did it pass or not? Like, so
right.
We really like this, but do this. That means like, y'all weren't fucking with it. So, but
yeah.
So it could be, honestly, like I said, it could be like a simple note. Like, sometimes you get notes like, oh, shit, I just got to like, this scene didn't do this. Can you do that? Add this to the scene for some emotion or whatever. All right, bam, done. 5-minute note. Sometimes it's like, oh, yeah, this whole first act don't fucking work. Then it's like, well, damn, if that doesn't work, then.
The whole shit I was going for ain't going to work. Yeah.
It's not like this whole thing is not going to work then, but that's just kind of what you deal with. And it's like a give and take. Sometimes you can fight notes just depending on how tight you are. Like if you're like a high level like writer, like, Kenya Bear is probably like, I'm not doing that.
Right.
I'm not fucking with that. Here's why. Like, okay. But, me is like, here you go. Like, no. What else? Check.
The most insane shit I've ever seen is when my second writer's assistant job, they went through all of the colors.
What do you mean all the colors?
So if you do a, if I send a note and you have a script, it's on one color, and then every time you change that and edit it while you're shooting, it's a different color. So you have to reprint it, and it's another color. And there's like five colors or six colors, and that's like, basically, this whole script is shit. Throw it away. And they had to do that over again like seven times.
Damn.
And I was like, what the fuck, bro? Like, and they did that day of it was supposed to start shooting. It's fucking insane, dog. This is a nonsense. Also, funny thing, Legends of Chamberlain Heights, I don't know who ran that Twitter, but one of the first blue checks that followed. Thank you. You really made me feel like I was funny. There. I was like,
like when I had the show, I realized early on, like, yo, the only way this shit's gonna ride is if it flourishes on social. Too many other shows are hitting on that. Like, it really has to crack into black Twitter. And I know how difficult that is. It's not just like, hey, we got a black show, you're gonna watch it. Like, that's not how this shit works. So I really just hit the ground with the Twitter, but started finding funny ass people that were posting good content, just anything that I could really engage with people that I knew would be kind of in that lane for the show, just so, you know, whatever, but try and be supportive as possible to everybody else out there. So I was able to build the account, because I didn't know shit about social when I took that thing over. I was just like, look, like, I got a ticking time clock. Like, if once this shit runs out, the show's going to get canceled. Like, if I can get like a miracle or something, just get like, you know, because I've seen it, you know, you see it on Twitter every once in a while. If I can just get one of those miracles, like some like a LeBron or whatever. Like we did, we got like Shaq and other people, but you know, like one isn't really gonna get you over, but as you build and get that following where it needs to be, but unfortunately didn't get there, but still learned a lot and then was able to transfer that shit over.
Hey man, you got that shit on the air and you got two seasons. Yeah. That's not unfortunate. That is.
It's unfortunate. I'm still mad because I like the show, first of all. And second of all, you know, I've been knowing Josiah since like 2003 or something, right? So yeah, when the show got on, I was like, oh shit, we all made it. I literally was texting your side. I'm like, yo, take me with you to Nice Things. Whatever the things are, I want to go to Nice Things.
I was talking to some young UCLA hoopers. I was talking to my buddy Gerald, who I did his pod, and he hooped at UCLA, and he was like, yo, man, when the show came out, we used to watch it, like me and some of the dudes on the team. And I'm just like, dude, if I was your guys' age and I knew somebody that hooped at UCLA, made a show, I'd watch that shit religiously, like we would have been getting it off. But I just really appreciated that. And yeah, to go from like, because this thing, we started this thing like 2009, bro. And then to get on the air in 2016, like, shit. It really kind of like changed my whole perspective of the entertainment industry. Because I went like, we started when I was like 27. I'm like, oh shit, I'm about to get it. Entourage, like really watching that. It was during that era.
Yeah, yeah.
Then by the time the show got on, I was like, shit, I'm a square now. Like, I can't even really, I can't even enjoy this. I'm a straight square now. Like, oh, like family man. Like, but it is what it is. So. I appreciate it though. We had fun with that shit, man. We had a really tight crew in that show too. So,
all right. Well, we caught up long enough.
Okay.
We're here to discuss.
I hope y'all using all that, right? Like,
what's up? We using all that.
Okay, I'm making sure.
Using all that place. Shit. Yeah, that's good shit. But we're here to discuss White Men Can't Jump, and I'll preface it by saying
it's
two things.
It's not a Spike Lee movie.
It's not a Spike Lee movie. It seems like one. But Josiah's dad plays. I don't even know the character's name. Pulls out the gun. The guy with the gun.
I don't even know the character.
And the reason I don't know character's name is my second point, which is I tried to stream this shit last night. It's not available for streaming anywhere. And I was like, damn, I could buy it, but I don't know if I want to own a movie I've seen 20 times.
Rent it. I rented it like a week or I rented it during whenever that Jordan doc was going on because I had to make a meme for it. But I had, and I like yourself, I needed this one particular scene. I couldn't get it. And it was like, come on, internet. Like, y'all should have been had this shit on YouTube.
I had to get that Radio Raheem painting that over my shoulder. I had to rent Do the Right Thing because I couldn't find like a high quality enough one to like go off of.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not doing that twice in 2 weeks, man. Like, I know the movie. I know White Man Can't Jump.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think this is the first basketball movie I might have ever seen. I don't know. What year did it come out? Do we know?
92.
Yeah. So I think it was the first basketball movie I ever saw. And I remember thinking at the time, like, Rosie Perez got titties. I was like 8 years old.
As a young kid, that was the highlight of the movie, was that Rosie Perez nipple shot. It was
this
like, oh.
Said Rosie Perez got titties.
Definitely.
Billy!
Yeah, as a kid, that was definitely, because I saw it, I think, probably like 5 or 6 times when it, like in the first run, like the different screenings and whatnot.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was definitely a highlight every time I watched it as a wee boy.
Yeah, yeah. I forget, you got to go to all this shit, right? Yeah.
I mean, I was young, but I went was on set a lot of times. Like I would read lines with my dad and run lines with him when he was getting ready to prep the role, and then I looked a lot now like he looked then, like he just let his shit go for a few months and kind of became the character. So
man, it's real nice. I got fathers and shit, you know, around Father's Day. Oh, it's real nice.
This man's real nice.
Tell me more stories about how you spent time with your dad.
Trying to get niggas.
You look just like him now.
Hey, you should have went around all yesterday.
Bro, I would have cracked up. He had one, and I was like, I'm not even going to tell him this is funny, but I laughed out loud. He's like, damn, y'all just going to keep rubbing in my face and y'all got dads and shit, huh? And I was like, this motherfucker here, bro.
Hey, you can start an IG with that, and I think that shit would kill.
Which just clowning other people for having a dad?
For having a dad. You just comment on all their photos and then post this shit. They're like, that looks fun. But just hate it on, dude. Because they can't do it themselves. Like, I know social, like I said, my account can go away tomorrow and I'll be right back on the block with some more heat. And really nobody will stop me, and that's just what it is. Maybe the following numbers or whatever, but those don't really impact my bag. So I know, like I said, Twitter's my pickup game, so I'm just in here for fun to keep people entertained, but... You know, obviously I love it and it's great, but at the end of the day, I'm not really tripping either way. I know I have a death wish, so it's all gravy.
Yeah, you described it a lot like how Michael Scott described the episode where he starts his own paper company, and the David Wallace goes like, your company can't be worth this much. He's like, my company's worth nothing. If it goes under today, I'll just start another paper company and another paper company. I've got no shortage of names. And he goes, Michael is like, that's one of them. That's one of the names.
Hey. The difference is, you know, you can get the bag, and that's the thing. I've cracked the code just on social in terms of, you know, really just spending years researching how people use it, like what really performs well. So now I just know I can go to the block. Like, if you notice, I'm not really on Twitter often. Like, when I really pop up, it's just to drop some heat, and then I'm right back to my life, whatever that may entail. So
yeah. That's word. Nice. And as a kid, that meant having a dad and going to set.
Yeah, on White Man Can't Jump.
How many times have you seen White Man Can't Jump?
Probably 100. Maybe more.
Jesus. And you had to watch it again? Oh, you just had to get the meme for it.
Because I needed the meme. It was the for Jordan, and he was watching the iPad, and I had the Wesley Snipes talking about when he took him to the hole in Venice Beach. Yeah. Thought, obviously, it was just a perfect clip. But it really wasn't on. Like, they had cut around it on some of the shit that was posted online, so I thought, all right, I got to grab this real quick.
Right.
Just really get it to the people they need it.
At the time when that movie came out, did you used to kick it, like, at Venice Beach a lot?
No. I mean, look, people go to Venice to hang out and shit. Like, you go play occasionally, but dudes there aren't really, like, good hoopers. I'm just saying, like, they're okay.
Those dudes true. In White Man Can't Jump weren't good hoopers.
Yeah, some of them weren't. Some of them weren't.
I'm just talking about the moves that they Wesley Snipes dribble this shit right here when he brought it all the way to the back and they jumped every time. Man. I was like, he did it the whole movie. Why y'all keep jumping on me? What are you doing?
Like, Wesley's very athletic but didn't have a lot of game. It's funny. I used to go to, they had, like, before the movie, they were doing workouts. So they were doing workouts with all the cast, right? Like, basketball and whatever. And he would always, like, nobody would want to fuck with him during drills and shit because he was going to mess up and they'd have to, like, go again. So... He noticed, started cutting people out. Like, oh, nobody.
No, fuck that motherfucker. I got this shit.
It's like, okay.
You got what about Woody Harrelson?
Woody, I think, actually did play at like a D2 or D3 at some point for some stretch. I don't know how long or what. So he actually had some games.
Yeah, the jumper looked wet. You can't fake the wetness of the J. You can't fake the look of it.
That dunk, no way, bro. I'm not buying it. That oop that he caught. Come on, bro. He was in the air for a whole 2 minutes.
I mean, I don't trust any basketball dunk scene where you don't see it for the wide
shot.
I need the wide
shot. That's what I'm saying.
If you cut to, like, just at the rim.
I'll see your legs. You on a ladder, bro.
Urkel fucking dunked that way. You know what I mean?
The legend.
I'm not here for it. That movie is hilarious, though. Rosie Perez, speaking up, is way too good for this man. She gave him so many times. And he just kept losing her money.
But she, I mean, he was a hooper, so she just, you know, loved that hoop life, no matter how low he get. Because, you know, he's like D3 hooper, so he's like, yo, we're moving to L.A. Right? She's like, oh! Get her out of wherever they were at, you know, fucking with the Stookies.
Conceptually, that's also insane that movie is just, I'm going to go gamble on pickup street basketball
for a living,
for like my main way.
Not even like because there's plenty of tournaments that like today, maybe there's more tournaments, but the people who do that do tournaments, and I guess they do like dunk contests in between if you got a lot of bounce, but I don't know anybody who's just like out here literally hustling for their living, gambling basketball,
rolling up on random parks. Like, oh, let's play 2-on-2. Right. And this is like
how much? $10,000. Like, what? $10,000. What the fuck?
Like, why?
100, 200, 300. Like, huh?
Family. I've never played one game of actual basketball for money. Maybe shooting, like half court shot, yeah, something like that. Like, but I've never played like me and you. $100 on the line.
Didn't Wesley have a business in that movie too? Like, why was he gambling?
The construction joint, but I mean, look, he was meeting at the, with the Okie dog to really get it off. So you already know he didn't have no office space or nothing like that.
True.
He was just trying to get by.
He was finessing.
He's probably just subcontracting to the, you know, trying to get a little bit of bread. I don't really envision Wesley was in it because we never saw him doing any of that the whole movie.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that one scene where he shows up.
He shows up a job, brother.
You know, but she, the dude picks the thing he wants, and then we never see him put it in. Like, I wanted to see Wesley really in action. Sidney Dean. I like to call him by their movie character names. I'll be getting confused. Sidney
Dean. Yeah, we could refer to him from here on out as Sidney Dean and Billy Ho.
Billy Ho.
Yeah, because I get confused. Like, I'll be like, wait, who's Wesley? I was really just fucking up in my head not remembering who Wesley was.
It's crazy how sad the movie is. Like, yeah. It's light because they're at the beach and it's funny, but it's like, what does Woody really end up with at the end? Like,
nothing.
He can still hoop. I think that was the moral of the story. I can still get buckets. And I'm still in LA. That's a good point, though.
Your knees only last so long, especially if you play strictly street basketball, bro. Like,
you gotta figure it
but
out.
But it doesn't even seem like that's happy for him. It's just like
what's messed
he
up
just starts out with like a lot more than he ends up with, and makes terrible choices the whole movie.
What really hurt me is that Gloria gonna win Jeopardy. She probably went on a streak like what Ken Jennings level. I mean, because the way she was just firing them off, at least won the whole week.
Yeah,
probably went back to tournament of champions, and she's gonna do them like that after she gets cake, and now they can finally live the life they deserve after he did everything for her out there hooping, risking his life.
I mean, he also gambled away all the money that she had saved over years and years.
Yeah, but you know, look.
But, I mean, he got her the shot on Jeopardy.
He did get her, you know, doing the gambling. 10%.
Okay, wait, here's what I don't understand. Why did he never tell her that he got her on Jeopardy? She never knows that that's how she made it on the show.
Because he wanted to think it was her own merit, that he's a real boo, diehard.
Once she wins the show, that's her merit. Like, bruh, what do you mean? They've dodged, like, killers and lived in all these places and saved every penny. And he can't tell her, oh, I made this shot and got you on the show. Like, we really did this together.
Why did those dudes, like, straight up run up in the crib with the straps only to, like, take a picture of him, like, being dead? Like,
I mean, you know, the Stookies are a complicated bunch, right? They're men of principle, okay? What I really believe about them is, like, look, like, we can really go out here and do that and risk jail, or you can just pay us our bread and we'll just take the photo. But I think early on they kind of foreshadowed when they had them going through the pictures, and even then I remember cracking up in the theater, not knowing that the payoff was going to be that they were all fake. But you're just looking; they didn't look like they were really fucking authentic. But
he said, "Be smarter, man. Be smarter, Billy." That shit was so funny to me.
Stookies. But yeah, I think look, hitting a half court shot for the Sudan, which is a great country. Wait, no, yeah, you're shooting for the Sudan, yeah, right? Because the other one was Ghana. And, you know, shout out to Amin Hassan and you know. The legend,
but I think know half exactly court, where he's from, so I don't.
He's
no
from
comment.
Sudan. Yeah, he's okay, from Sudan. Right. He's Sudanese. You know, legends. So it was weird to me too. Like, why are they shitting on the Sudan? The Sudan's got legends too. But I digress. But hitting a half court shot, one, you know, hook shot. Come on, dog. 10%.
So because of that,
I need 10% of all future earnings.
Because of that shot, I probably practiced, and I still will at times, like shooting half court hook shots all the time. Like, it's incredibly hard to make. Like, crazy hard. You have to basically be Kareem. And then, I wonder, like, Kareem could probably make 40% like, to this day.
Sure.
But no one else in the history of basketball is going to shoot a hook from half court that efficiently. Like, it's again, when you do that, then why don't you tell her? It's like, yo, not only did he probably hit the hardest shot he's ever hit in his life.
Yeah.
Like, just on some bragging shit, I come and be like, yo, even if it was for nothing, like, I didn't make no money today, but... At a half court shot.
As is proven by the fact that he keeps gambling and losing, he makes bad decisions, bro. Like,
yeah, but he also makes up for them. A lot of people make bad decisions and keep on just making them.
He's a gambling addict, bro.
Because you got to keep. Woody being white, I think, is a big part of this also. Like, the story wouldn't be as strong if Sidney was out here doing the same shit. Because it's like. I know a lot of, we have mutual friends who are these like white guy types who like are perpetual fuck ups, but then they like, they bring you like a bottle of champagne and some cake, like, oh, I'm sorry, man. And then it's like, oh, okay, you're welcome back again. Like, it's like this cachet that like a white guy who can like present himself for a minute really has. unlike anyone else on.
But he was a cool ass white dude. And I think once you transcend whiteness, like get to the barbecue, as we say in contemporary culture, like Billy was about that life.
But when did Billy, like, or in this story, when is he really invited to the barbecue? Because
when he shows up to Watts to go hoop and literally doesn't get beat up and get all his bread taken, he's allowed to stretch and play the game and really go home.
They mock him on the way in and try to shoot him on the way out.
I mean, they mock all of everybody. Yeah. Anybody who's in the...
Specifically
that him. Movie is 90% caps, bro. Like, the dialogue
when he hops the fence, caps. When he hops the fence and dives Sydney, I believe, on the toss-over of the bag, like, you know he's about that action.
But then they rob from him. Like, do you really feel like he's ever, like, part of the group?
Nah, he's too nice is the point I'm making. Yeah. He got played. Yeah. He kept getting finessed.
You're going to get finessed. I mean, look, that's the part of the game.
What Rosie say? You play or you get paid.
Okay, but do you feel like Sidney Dean gets finessed?
No, he's the finesser because for slavery, dog. Like, that's just like a membership fee. Like, look, Billy, you want to be in the game? Like, we've all got gotten at times. Like, look, I used to get gotten in high school on occasion, overpaying for Doritos and shit. Like, oh, you got me? Fuck. I'm going to fight you over a dollar and I'm good.
But I'm saying that's why at the end of the day, you're at the cookout because you have the experience.
Yeah.
But you have it's hard for someone to, like, just get that when they're old.
How old is Billy? You know what's fucked up?
He's got to be 30.
Yeah, 92. Because we have to pretend like we're that age of Billy Ho. I'm thinking of like current Wesley.
Yeah, like you just said yourself that you look like your dad then.
Yeah, my dad was 36 when he shot, 35 when he shot. I'm 38 now, so I'm a little
That's bit what I'm
older.
Saying. Yeah, these are crazy. All like 30-year-old men. Like he's not some like teenager like learning the ropes. It's
for sure.
It appears by all accounts, because no one has ever heard of him, that he just came in from somewhere like Iowa.
Yeah.
And was just like... That's why I'm saying I don't feel like he's ever like truly ingratiated. Maybe until the very last scene where it seems like they're like kind of friends.
Yeah, for sure.
But the whole time he's like, I think that's actually the bigger thing for him. It's not. It's like the decisions and all that kind of all revolve around him just wanting to like be part of this culture that he's not clearly not a part of natively.
I think that Billy was the nigga Jim to Sydney's Huck Finn. Is that his name?
I mean, yeah, but the reference, like, I don't know what that means enough to, like, give you a good answer.
Nigga, quote Bush.
Are you
ready?
This is what he does.
Are you educated,
lucky it was
huh?
That, not some, like, Chronicles of Narnia ass shit.
Well, that wouldn't have any I feel like, appropriate value.
Like, Huck Finn is, like, required reading, right?
Yeah. Like, we had to read
it. Yeah, I read it, yeah, like, fourth grade or something. Yeah, I mean,
the whole point is that the Huck Finn's dilemma at the end of the book is whether he should sell Nigga Jim out to... back to slave owners or not. And it's like, the whole time he's like, this is my friend, Nigga Jim. Why you call him Nigga Jim all the time for your friend? Man? But anyway, I digress. It is someone who's supposed to be the homie, but like...
Right.
They were cool. I mean, look, like, were you cool with everybody you hooped with? Like, you had a mission. You guys would hang out
mostly
sometime.
Mostly, no.
Exactly. I'm just saying. Like, you had your crew, the Boom Though crew and all that, but beyond that, like, who are you really rocking with?
That's true, but okay, I'll say this, like, even... if we weren't close, because we all basically had the exact same experience, is why they say like there's like a fraternity in like the NBA. But I would say it extends like, especially guys who played overseas. It's like, I never have to play one game in Russia to be like, oh, you play in Russia? That's fucked up out there, huh? Like, I know how it goes because we've been through it. What I'm saying is Billy's walking in from nowhere and just being like, yo, guys, I want to be part of the club. But and that makes him like an extra step removed, and he's white, which say.
But we don't know. But we don't know where Billy's made previous stops after Hustle. He might have been in Houston getting it down. He might have been in Chicago and really just embracing these black communities, and now he's trying to really come take over LA. Really see what that action is about.
I mean, that
it's a lot like the pimp game, honestly. If you can like compare like 2-on-2 basketball with pimping, I'm just saying you go into different locations, you just never know what's going to happen.
What?
You know?
We throwing out hot metaphors out here today.
I really was into pimp movies in college, so just really understanding them. Not even like the shady side of it, but just, you know, the business side. Like, really
like what pimp movie?
Pimps Up, Hoes Down, American Pimp, you know. The basics. One of the greatest docs ever.
He said, you know, slight work. I mean, what's the one about the white dude? My bad.
I mean, no, go ahead.
Mr. White Folks. I can always forget if he's, I think he's Pimps Up, Hoes Down, but Mr. White Folks. Yeah, because both of them, like,
his name
different...
is Mr. White Folks. I've never seen either of these movies.
Bro, the most you don't, entertaining shit I've ever seen.
Like, you were around in those early 2000s. This is how we were talking. Like, honestly, we were just.
It was, but I never, like, first of all, especially back then,
that
I was super square, so it's like. A lot of that shit back, man. That's crazy. Like,
but you were fucking with Lil Wayne, though. I specifically remember you at fandom parties fucking when Lil Wayne would come on, you and Ike and shit would go hard.
Yeah, but that was like, that was probably like 2006. Like 2002.
Okay. All
right. I was a different, it like wasn't until like, oh, yeah, probably when I first actually started coming out there.
Yeah.
You got to keep in mind, yeah, I'll say this story. Shit, I went to Pete Newell Big Man Camp in Vegas, and I was 19. This is before my junior year, so I would have turned 20.
Was this what year was this? 04 or something?
04, yeah.
Okay,
04.
Okay.
And that's the same year I actually met Mike Fay, which was Josiah's teammate at the time. He was my roommate. And before this, I never like really even talked to any other Pac-10 like hoopers at all.
Yeah. And, I didn't know that. Okay, but continue.
Yeah, yeah. So I walked in and just seen Mike Fay's bag, and I was like, okay, like I don't know if he like is gonna just hate me or like, because really I had no idea how this shit would go. So, but he ended up being hella cool, but he was hella old for us being in the same year. Like,
yeah,
this motherfucker was like 21 in like some months. And then this dude Mike Jensen played at Washington. He was also 21. And so like the three of us would kick it, but when nighttime came, like they went out, and I had to like just walk around the casino floor basically, right?
Damn. So
I just remember like that moment of that week watching them like get it in. I was just like, God, can't wait to grow up a little bit more. Like, you know, like I saw a lot of like that I didn't see at Berkeley because there wasn't any parties or any. Yeah. And also, like the older dudes on the team didn't really fuck with me like that. Like, like freshman who's not playing, like they're not, I got no time for you. Just like,
how was Vegas Pete Newell Big Man Camp? Was it fun?
It was. Yeah, I guess it was fun. I mean, it was in Hawaii before that, which I would have probably preferred.
So I went to the last one in Hawaii. I want to say it was like the 25th anniversary, probably like 02, 03. But I was saying that one because it was the college guys that would work out, then the NBA guys would come on. But that one was lit because we were all just getting it. Like, we all rent scooters and just shoot around the town.
Right.
It was like a ride or die video on scooters. You imagine a bunch of like big 6 foot eight dudes just like whipping down on scooters, getting it in. But we actually, but I was young. So I don't know how, but I got into the club because I remember like Samuel Dellenberg and a bunch of other random dudes just in there really getting it in.
That's funny. Dellenberg was at mine too. So what was it? This guy needed a lot of big man camp work.
And that camp was fun though. I was there with Super Crip. I don't know if you heard that name before.
Yeah, I know Super. I don't know Super Crip, but I.
So he was hooping at Auburn, and obviously we were at camp together. We would ride on the bus, sit next to each other and shit. And I'll never forget, like, I had my knees iced, but like it was hot as fuck. And he's like, "Yo, cuz, let me hit that bag." He made me like take the bag off my knee and like pop the hole in and like drink the water in it.
What? No, you never drink the what?
But he was that thirsty, and he was Super Crip. So what the fuck was I gonna say to Super? I'm just like, God, like, you have, he's revered in the LA community. That's my first time ever interacting with him. I was like, Mr. Crip, you have no idea. I'm a big fan, yeah. Big fan of your Cripping, but. But yeah, it was like, but I remember the Hawaiian was legendary shit. Sorry to go off track.
No, if it was in Hawaii, I think it would have been less fractured. Because it was in Vegas, it was very, there was like three groups of people.
Yeah.
There was the motherfuckers there who had money and gambled like I had never seen to that point in my life. Then there was the dudes who was 21, and all they did was go to the clubs at the Palms. Because there's like six clubs there. So they'd be like, oh, we just came back from rain. I'm like, it just sounds cool. It's called rain?
You probably could have, like, there was a stretch in that those early 2000s when the Palms, because like Real World and all that shit was like the most crackiness. Like,
yeah.
But so my teammate Ryan Walcott, his cousin Mike Bibby was playing with the Kings, and Maloof Brothers owned the Palms. So we went there Memorial Day weekend one year. It was the most turned up shit I've ever been associated with, just like front of the line.
I mean, yeah, if you're there with the Maloofs,
right,
or essentially with the Maloofs, you go to Vegas place? With anybody who's like above a certain level, it's like a whole different city. Yeah. I've been there for Summer League,
yeah,
where it's like people act like I'm part of that group, and I get like halfway in the yeah. doors.
Summer League's not tight, to be real. For anybody really trying to get it in, there's way too many dudes that are 6'8", 6'9", really high, you know.
Taking away the unicorn.
I'm just saying, you're not special with them shit. If you don't have any bread, you're just there, like,
right.
All right, a tall
walking nigga, around. Like, the good old days.
That's a good point. That especially in college, I'd be like, man, if there's athletes at the party, I don't want to be there. Because at Berkeley, there was only like so many women, anyways.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I'm kind of like the squarest dude here. Like, I have no self confidence. Like, Omar would be like, yeah, wherever all the homies are at, we're going. I'm like, Omar, are you confident, light-skinned and motherfucker? Like,
Omar is good-looking.
Omar's like, when women walk up to you to tell you how good-looking someone else is, it's so fucking annoying, especially at that age. Like, now I'd be like, oh, shit, that's the homie. Go get it. But back then I was like, man. what do I got to do?
That's a dagger to the confidence right there.
There's so many inner politics people will never know about. Like at UCLA, like the baseball team, they would be like super sneaky. So they would only have their own function, not tell anybody. And they live like a little off campus. So you would just hear about like random women going to their party, but never really hear about the function. But dude, like, I give it up. They had it figured out. Meanwhile, they would just leave all of us just to, you know, fight each other and wrestle for whatever was left over. But
you guys had the thing about UCLA, we're clearly not talking about the movie anymore. The thing about UCLA is because you were in proximity to Hollywood, you guys were way more relaxed. Like Berkeley,
it's in Berkeley.
Like there was like 60% of the campus wasn't partying off top. They just didn't want to.
Squares.
Yes. And then there was like another like high percentage that like may not speak English. Like it was a very like Asian heavy campus. And like, I mean like literally like coming in to like study straight from there. And then it's like, and then so you dwindle it down to like who's actually out, and it's like the same 100 women, and then like 8,000 dudes. It seemed like all.
Oh, hey, because it was the dudes that went there, but then they would tell their homies who didn't go there, and they would come too.
Come to visit and shit. So many dudes. It's like, I don't need you to visit, bro. You gotta go somewhere else.
But this made a campus culture that was like super crazy because it was like we were all like always in competition with one another, like competition for like spots on the court, and then like for like women off the court,
shooting
like
and everything.
And then you go to like, I go to Arizona and it's like, oh shit, we all here. And then like nobody gave a fuck because
they lived a different life in Tucson.
Completely different life.
I didn't really get it in at Arizona State, but even though like one of my teammates from Phoenix, like we had love out there. We would just go hang out and do whatever, not really on campus. But Arizona was like, that was another situation.
Is UCLA altogether like USC, where it's not really like a college thing? I feel like most USC kids I've ever met just like go to the clubs, like the LA clubs.
So SC is weird because it's in the hood, right? So they they're allowed to like drink on campus and do whatever, and their stadium's right on campus. Yeah. So imagine on game day, like the stadium's like whatever. You can go to like 500 tailgates, get whatever. UCLA, we were at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, so they literally have to bus out. True. So our game's not as turned. You're in this 100,000 seat thing with like 40,000 people, and people had to bus 45 minutes or an hour to get there, pissing themselves and vomiting on, you know, these shitty buses or whatever. Correct. But I'm saying they were able to get it in a lot more. But what we had that was different was Hollywood. So we had a whole other, like, you think of somebody like Emily Ratajkowski, right? Went to UCLA. I don't think she probably touched just for like a week to feel normal. Then after that, she's straight to whatever was cracking on Sunset for the next.
Facts. Yeah.
You know, so you could really, but the thing is, you don't think about. But it works is that you said a basketball player, you kind of have a leg up. But you go to Hollywood now, you're dealing with the Jamie Foxxes of the world and all these other type of human beings who may not be 6'8", whatever, but they got a lot of bread, can stunt on you. You're kind of, but you're still sticking out, standing out there. So you're still kind of getting hollered at or whatever. But it's just an interesting, because even on campus, like football and basketball dudes, like I think there was like a truce kind of when we were there. But before that, it was like fade on sites. Like, because, you know, like you said,
it was like Bloods and Crips football and basketball in college. You have to cover the girls. Not together.
Like the girls who were like the coveted crown jewels. And I remember when I was there, one of my teammates literally snagged like the crown jewel and literally had the whole campus in an uproar. But you know, I'm just sitting back cracking up. It was the funniest thing.
Burn this bitch down.
He was a black dude. She was a white chick. And it was like, even like all the white like savages were like sad. And it's like, bro, I know how you get down. You're like, you tell him like treat her nice and shit. Like, it was like, come on, dog.
I wonder if I know who you're talking about. You don't have to say
that. We can talk about it offline, but I'm sure you can figure it out. I'm sure your head's processing right now.
Is it someone who's the sister of someone I know? Or is that different?
Ooh, I don't know. I think you definitely know it's cracking.
Okay.
I'm just saying. I don't like to name that, but me, it was like, I don't think they would care either. But when it went down, it was just like, it was beautiful. It was like kind of what we're seeing now in the black community, like rising up. Because you see the look on those white dude's faces. Just like,
rising up.
Like, honestly, the hurt in their heart.
I never saw
anything. To see dudes really, even on the team I was on, to see dudes change, like, emotionally, just like, you better be nice to her, dog. Like, like, bro, no, you do that. But it was a funny moment. But I think for us, like for SC had like, so they had everything in proximity. I want to say their frats and sororities were right across the street from each other.
Yeah.
Ours were literally on either side of the campus, and it was probably like a 2-mile walk to get from one, probably like a good mile and a half to get from one to the other. But we also had on the low the W, which was super cracking for different periods, which was like right on the other. And that's where like you would kind of just begin to touch Beverly Hills a little bit.
Because it was right next to campus too. Like on the back right side. There.
Oh, it was beautiful.
That campus had like the Playboy Mansion was right there. Yeah. The W's right there. And then those UCLA kids also go to like Brentwood and Santa Monica and shit. Yeah. Like it's it's way better positioned. Like, yeah, but sure. USC's frat row, it's like, it's like another level. It's just like, it's the most frattiest frat row I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's fratty as fuck.
It's like, I went a few times probably, I think, before I started at UCLA, maybe once or twice when I was actually a student, but it's just too much going on. It was like, you know, it was like, shit, bro. This is like,
man, I went to the frat row once, like, maybe it was after we played a game there or something. Yeah. Like, and I just remember, I won't name the name, but anyone can pick this up if they want to just do the math. The quarterback of USC was laying face down in like the middle of the street. And I remember saying out loud, like, damn, they got motherfuckers just passed out in the street. And then I got close and I was like, is that number 11?
Wow. So I'm not going to say his name. Oh, my God.
Bro, the shit you would see. Oh, my God.
Yeah, shit.
I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to do it.
I'm not going to name names for you.
Hey, if you look at the run that those dudes had, though, because, like, we thought we were sweet at UCLA, mm-hmm. but the run that SC had when they won those, like, two or three natties and that whole Reggie Bush and Lindell crew.
Yes.
Like, they ran LA. I'm not even going to hate.
There's still some like, before I got in a relationship, I think there'd be times, like, seriously, where I'd meet a girl and be like, I wonder if she, like, had sex with anybody at USC. Because probably. Like, we're the same age. Like, you said you went to, like, Pepperdine. Like, I was like,
I mean, why are you even asking? Statistically speaking, it's most likely.
But these are things you'd have to consider, really, in college. Like you were saying, it's because even on a bigger scale, like, you know, in the region, like, there was only a certain amount of people that are getting hollered at. Then Facebook was introduced kind of in the tail end of my college career, I think, heavy for yours. So that really just changed and opened up the ball game. And then I'm sure kids now with, like, IG and... like, this is the things they get off. I wonder how many dudes are getting catfished, though, to be real, because...
gotta be a lot.
If I was, like, a frat dude at another school, I feel like catfished, like...
Bro, you know the biggest, like, catfish story in college sports happened at Cal my senior year.
Who? Because we had a catfish, too, going around.
No. This is, like, a legendary... like, there's volumes on this. You can Google it. But I'll tell you from my perspective, which is that I was at a frat party, and these, you know, we have it at Berkeley. It's called RallyCom. They're the ones who wear the striped shirts.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and they're like the most like cheeriest people or whatever. And there was three of these dudes there, and they're like, oh man, Rod Benson, like, man, like, because it was senior night was coming up against SC. They're like, senior night, man, we got the best shit plan. Just look out for someone named Victoria. I'm like, what does that mean? They're like, you'll see. So we get to the game, and, you know, like, because we come out for warm-ups early, but then we go back.
Yeah.
And then when it's really time to get cracking, like, the crowd is out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Come out the first time, and I see, like, there's papers on every seat. Like, a lot of times that's usually just, like, some sort of score thing or, like...
yeah, like there's players
thing. Players of the game, yeah, whatever. Turns out that these sheets were transcripts of conversations between this made-up woman named Victoria and Gabe Pruitt, who was the starting point guard for SC.
Yeah.
Ended up getting drafted by Boston. Like, he was on the same team as Nick Young.
Yeah, he was a killer.
They had... again, this is 2006, so nobody saw it coming. They were talking to this dude for months. Mm. They had, I think, nudes of him, but they only showed, like, the top half of his body. Day. They had his phone number, his information, like, his family information, the transcripts of him saying, like, oh, do you want to, like, get this dick or whatever, like, all this shit.
Get this dick or whatever.
And so Gabe obviously has no idea this is coming either. So I guess the on the papers it said what they were planning to do. Like, again, I'm seeing this in real time. So we get out, like, there's nothing. There's nothing happening. It's just a regular game. Like, senior night, because it's a big production, though. As soon as, like, the tip goes up, like, 10 fans stand up with, like, cards. Each one as big as this window. Like, one number of Gabe Pruitt's phone number. Like, and they just start going, Victoria. And you can see him be like, you can see him realize it in real time. Like,
I gotta watch his game tape now.
Oh my. And he went.
Ball out?
He went like 4 for 22.
That's
beautiful.
It was
fucking tragic. I've never seen someone bad. Because you can't get got that bad anymore. Like, not like that.
You can. They gave us a lesson sophomore year.
Did they teach you about him?
Boy, they had us. No, they didn't. Because they had this shorty hit everybody up on Facebook. And she was coming a little hard. And I was like, this something smells fishy here, Batman. And then she literally had a we had a meeting. And this lady came in. I was like, why does she look familiar, Doc? And then she goes, hi, da-da-da-da-da. And then they go up on the screen and they were like, who are these people? And I was like, what's my picture up there. And I saw some other people up there. There's all the people at she had added on Facebook, and then she started showing all the messages these niggas had been sending her. I was like, thank God I'm not thirsty. This is terrible.
Hey, I'm glad I'm a square now, but you're just like, come on, dog. It's 2020.
You niggas you got your head in the sand, bro.
I can only imagine what women are dealing with on like these platforms. If somebody like follows you, I'm sure you're like, oh, they're thirsty. You know what I'm saying? Some niggas head's like, oh, she's thirsty. I'm about to get her.
Bro, that shit is hilarious.
Because back in the day, it was like the club grab. The arm grab was like the thing back in the day. And now I'm looking like, that's kind of assault, dog. But chicks will walk by and be like, and they niggas be trying to grab them. And it's like, what do you think you're about to cop this, dude? Like, she's just going to submit to your will? Like, what the fuck is going on? But
nah, it definitely is what you're saying, but then also I've seen it work so many times that it's very confusing.
Big facts.
I'm like, what do you mean? Like, because I've never been that dude, but I've seen people do it, and I'm like, what do you do? That works?
That's why it doesn't make sense for us.
That's probably why niggas were doing it. Okay, now it all makes sense. I was always looking like, what the fuck is going on, dog? But you're right. If you do it 10 times, you go 1 for 10 for the average human being. That's fucking a great night.
When Me Too started, I wrote a long article basically like challenging myself, but I titled it Stop Whipping Your Dick Out. And what I said, because it was new, it is a bit nuanced, women hate when you whip your dick out, but also I've seen it work. So I think dudes are like, hey man, it always works. Either they want the deer, they don't want the D. I'm like, this is amazing.
That's terrible.
It's terrible. I'm telling you how it got there. It's trash.
It's just crazy. But
I know many people who've been like, I'm like, oh, what happened last night? Like, oh, I fucked. Like, what? You guys didn't even talk the whole night. Oh, I just took my dick out. What? That's all you did? Like, yeah. And then she just was like, okay.
I mean, maybe their dicks really, I don't know. Maybe when they see it, it's just like, wow, that is the dick.
For sure, every sport has that. But I think just niggas have that, where it's just like, somebody gave them the false that works. And they were like, well, this is how we going to play this game from now on.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's just, I don't get it.
Well, I think especially as the only motherfucker here without a dad. The a lot of us black men learn about we learn about sex shit from our friends and not from like a responsible ass motherfucker. Yeah. So it just kind of passes on these like terrible
pornos. Like, I mean, like, I think I was watching pornos at a young age.
You think or you
way younger than
you? Rosie Perez.
But I was talking about camera angles and directing. I was really into cinematography and things like that, and really storyline and plot. So even from that standpoint. But I just think you're made to look at women a certain way, and it's fucked up. Because even like as athletes, probably in college, I'm sure it was kind of that. And this was what was instilled upon you, like, you know, you can do whatever you want. Like, you're that dude. Like, you could pass out in the middle of the street, and then not even, you know, somebody's gonna grab you.
Yeah,
like it's not.
Athletes, popular culture, play.
There's also another part of it that's like what's expected from us as being black men and being like over sexualized, which is like,
yeah.
Like, I forget what movie or show this is, but, like this dude's, like, smashing, and maybe it's the Heartbreak Kid. She goes, like, fuck me like a black guy. And it's, it was, like, way funnier when the movie came out, and now I'm, like, that's such a trash-ass line.
That's terrible.
But it's, like, that's what the expectation is, that, like, we don't get it in how white squares get it in.
Well, I'm sure, like, if you go to frat parties and shit, and you see niggas dancing, it's like, oh, okay. Well, on beat. You know, I'm sure, you know, I'm just really subconscious because, like, I don't know if you ever went to El Dorado with us back in the day. It was Tuesday night, so maybe like summertime or something. But that was like the spot that everybody came. They had DJs and music. But obviously, like, if you could get it in, like, people were fucking with you because you would see how the squares dance, and there would be like a whole sideline or a pit area of just the squares watching the niggas who could dance because they weren't really going to get out there and get embarrassed. I think women just thought maybe that would lead to certain things, like, you know, if you were smashing.
I'm going to pivot before we play ourselves. I do want to know, because the base of this is athletes who go into the arts. Your dad, Hooper, actor, did that have something to do? I mean, obviously somewhat, but like, have you always been like, this is really what I want and I'm just hooping because it's a...
So for basketball, I was kind of like forced into it. Not forced, but it's just, this is what it is. If you grow up at Johnson in LA, you're hooping at some point, some level, some capacity. That's just... I remember I was probably like, my dad played in the All-Star game, I want to say in 86 in Dallas, came back from the airport, had this mini hoop for me. I was probably like 4 at that point.
Yeah.
And that was, from there, it was just like a wrap. I was doing that. But thankfully, I was blessed because he had a lot of money. I was blessed to live. Like, we started out living in Bel Air Then ended up moving back to Windsor Hills U Park when I was probably in like third grade, fourth grade. But went to a school called UES where I got really plugged into arts and entertainment and whatever. Was like going to school with so his teammate on the Clippers was a dude, Norm Nixon, who played with the Lakers too. And his wife is Debbie Allen, who obviously a different world and Grey's Anatomy and pretty much everything you can ever think of. So as kids, we would get picked up. Me and her kids are around the same age. We would get picked up and like on Thursdays, we would go to the different world set, like from campus. And that's where you were going to like 9 o'clock at night. Like my mom was an extra on and my dad was in a bunch of extra work on a bunch of the shows and shit. But that's just so I would be on set chilling, like, you know, and like, you know, being able to do whatever I want. I'm not in like the seated area. I can go like roam around on set and do it. Like look at shit, like go pick up a cup, put it down. But I'm literally like reading scripts and shit and just kind of immersed in it. And it was just like, yo, this is amazing. Like just this world, like looking at like a young Jada Pinkett, you know, before she blew up, she was on the show, I want to say like fourth or fifth season, but thinking like, damn, like just looking at her acting shit, like, oh, she's fucking, she's going to be huge. Like she's got whatever, but not really realizing then kind of as I got older, like really getting into that world. So I really thank him a lot for giving me those opportunities. Cause I don't know where I would be. Cause even with him like going on set and reading lines and he would audition for parts all the time, so I'd have to read lines. And my writing scripts is probably like a 9 or 10 year old, just like little scripts I would format on a legal pad and try to make them look like the ones that he was going off of. So I was just immersed in it, and being in Hollywood, just going to school with all these kids, like, you know, me and John Landis's daughter were like best friends as like, you know, 5 or 6 year olds. So I'd be at parties with him and shit, not even realizing, because I'm watching like Coming to America and all the movies as like a 7 year old. Like, oh, this motherfucker made this shit, Thriller and fucking Captain EO and all this other shit. I'm just like, damn, this dude did all that. So I think just being in that world, being immersed in it, it was like, yo, this is what I want to do. And then now being an adult, like, man, we get to actually really make this shit happen. It's like, it's a cool experience.
What's crazy is that your dad, I mean, maybe there's some examples I'm not really considering, but he's like one of like two NBA players who was like really out there acting like while they were playing or like around the like right after their career. Like Kareem and him are the only two I really know.
So my dad even more than me, like obviously he was player of the year in 77, so he was experienced at UCLA. He went to Crenshaw to UCLA, but he was a theater arts major, which a lot of people don't know. So he was literally a theater arts major at UCLA, and part of that was like hosting like a TV show like that was closed circuit on campus, but he was doing a lot of that type of shit. So he always had the artistic bug. It's funny, when he was like playing in Milwaukee's first couple years, he made all these home movies, but they would do dumb shit. Like if one of their friends passed, like shit we do now, one of their friends passed out, he'd make a home movie around like, they'd put a bunch of like fake drugs, oregano and shit around them and shit. And just actually, you know, but sitting there like with the Jamaican music playing and just like, you know.
But in the 70s, this is 70s. Whatever this footage is probably fucking gold.
And I remember just kind of sitting, but always like, he always just had this mind for creativity and shit, writing scripts and acting and wanting to do shit and actually being good at it. So perfecting the craft. It's like a lot of dudes just, oh, I'm just gonna act. Just like, nah, it's a fucking. So I remember acting school, all that type of shit. He was going hard. Like, White Man Can't Jump, he busted his ass for that role. And even like, I think one of the most famous parts when he's robbing the liquor store and he's like, nah, this ain't Raymond. I think it was completely ad libbed. He was trying to do his Mike Tyson voice, but they saw it, they did a take with it. They're like, fucking love that shit. Right. So now it's like one of the key. I remember when that scene hits in the movie. Because that movie's a romance, I have a rom-com, Mass is a basketball story, right? But when that scene hits and the way the theater reacted, I remember the first time, I'm like, oh, shit. Like, this dude's about to be a legend. Like, just the laughter. You know, that's probably one of the highlights of the movie. And even still now, he was a 5-time All-Star College Player of the Year. Like, you know, should be in the Hall of Fame very soon. But people in, like, the current generation just know him from White Man Can't Jump. You know, that's, for, like, that's the only thing, the only reference point they have of him. And not, like, you know, all this other shit. But it's wild that, so he actually, like, I keep it real with him. If he does like a bad job and shit, I'll tell him. But like, you know, like he takes his shit serious. And you can tell when you're watching dudes try to act sometimes. It's like, oh, this is tough, bro. Yeah. You know, I know he did a lot of takes of this shit where he's like, he's fucking a pro.
I was introduced to your dad.
I already know you. I already know.
I don't think Chris knows this, but it was my junior year, my sophomore year, actually. I got like, finally started earning a little bit of minutes. We're playing the University of Oregon. And I just get thrown in there, like, in the first half, which is, like, wild when you don't play. And you're just like, oh, bro, shit. I'm like, shit. I'm in the game and it counts. And, like, this is important.
This shit matters.
And I was doing very well. Like, I probably played, like, 20 minutes. I finished with, like, 8.6 rebounds and 4 blocks, right? But, like, throughout the game, like, I made every layup I took and was missing every jumper. So, I was like 0 for 1 on a jumper, then, like, 1 for 2 on a layup, then, like, 2 for 3 on a layup, then 2 for 4 on a missed jumper. So I missed, like, my third jumper, and Mr. Johnson says, what is Benson doing? Thinking he runs the mansion. He's just the butler or whatever. And I like, after, like, my biggest game, I couldn't focus on anything except for that line. I was like, first of all, the fuck is this reference? What does it even mean? What do you mean? I'm out here doing it. And then what happens is, to ice the game, we're up one with like 20 seconds left. I hit a jumper, and the play-by-play guy goes like, Benson, and then Mr. Johnson goes, of all people. I'm like, God damn, why are you playing me? I'm out here trying to get my shine.
Hey, I would have teammates.
Nigga dragged you.
Teammates would get mad at me like, your dad don't be hating on you. Like, it's like, I don't play, dog. Like, what the fuck you gonna say? He's for me, like, he don't be clowning you like he be trying to clown us. Like, the nigga thinks he's funny. What do you want me to do?
I mean, it is funny. It's just
funny
like,
as shit.
When you're
bro.
That age, it's so much bullshit you're dealing with.
Yeah.
You have like when you're even on the court at all, it's every minute so important.
Yeah, for sure.
And someone's out here joking about it. I'm like, this ain't a joke to me, dog. You know what I had to do to get out of slap people to get here?
Hey, you know when you play meaningful first half minutes, it was like, oh, God. Like the unexpected
first half minutes.
I would do well in those times, and then sometimes I wouldn't. But like the unexpected, I'm gonna go hit a jumper, do whatever. Like shit, I know I got to. The thing with me, they always used to crack up about. I could get a stat. Like as soon as I got in, within like the first 10 seconds, I'm gonna get a rebound, a bucket. So I'm gonna get something.
Yeah,
something cracking. But some of our bigs, like they would struggle rebounding and shit. I'm like, nigga, I'm not walking out with zeros on this motherfucker. I need something, bro.
Yeah,
people are gonna look at the stat line in the paper. They need to fucking feel a certain way about it.
He had a lot of big men who weren't really rebounders. Until you got Mata.
Mata's a legend. Love Mata.
I feel like that's a whole nother story. Right?
Yeah. No, Mata's just a, he's just a guy who played at UCLA, but he's like.
He's a legend.
I think, from an outsider's perspective, UCLA had, when I was in school at least, like a lot of the best recruits in the country, like year after year. And then there was this period where they started getting like big men that no one had ever heard of, really. At least like not like on the level of the other guys. Like they'd have like the second best center in the nation. Yeah. And then like for a couple years it was like Mata, Mbah Mute. These guys who ended up being very good players. Yeah. But Mata especially kind of has like a interesting face or ear or something thing. Which when you don't know him and you're just on the other team, you're like, oh, like fuck this weird looking dude. I'm gonna give him this work, and he'd be out there playing hard, man. Like,
hoping. He had these fucking big ass tree trunk fucking calves and ankles, so you couldn't really move him and shit. But he would just throw his body around. And I remember my pops before he came to UCLA. My pops saw him play. Well, like he was playing with, like the pumps in the AAU game, and they were playing like the Atlanta Celtics, I believe, or somebody like that. And this is when they had like Randolph Morris and that whole crew.
Yeah, Randolph Morris can ball too. Yeah,
but he was literally like, "Yo, Low Mata was the best player on the court, like, but just killing these dudes, like rebounding buckets, whatever." But he came in honestly and literally because he like sweet ass dude, like really just nice, funny as fuck, like but works hard, like you know what I mean. But he was such a legend in the Latino community. Like, yeah, I used to joke like the three top people at that time were like Oscar De La Hoya, Antonio Villaraigosa, who was the mayor, and then Low Mata. Like, cause everywhere we went, it was like, I'm just saying, if you think of like Selena and like that type of shit,
yeah,
it wasn't quite that level. But everywhere we went, he would get rolled up on. I mean, he would get rolled up on by motherfuckers, just like no, like you know, we'd be walking in a random airport, somebody would just hand him a pizza. Like it was like some Coming to America type shit when they saw him came with the game.
He was a starting center on a Final Four team.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's like the only Mexican player like getting shine. Like he's actually Mexican. I saw last time I think I saw him in person was like 2010. Downtown.
Okay.
And he was like dating or just maybe just with like Miss Mexico.
Yeah.
And I was like, Mata's got juice that I just don't see. I don't know where this is coming from.
Mata is that dude. Bro.
I don't understand.
You know Miss Mexico was bad.
Had to be.
Mata's got a killer mouthpiece, but just a great dude, bro. Like super honestly loyal, like great friend. Like, you know, I remember there was a period we were getting it in. Like even after we graduated, we would still fuck with that crew.
Hmm.
And him and Quinn were even living together for a minute. So just interesting times. Like Westbrook was on that squad, but Westbrook had like this janky ass beater car that he used to have to like pour water in to get the engine to start and shit. And then like we always tell the story like fucking a couple months later after he gets drafted, he's pulling up in like the S5. Just like,
oh, yeah, I didn't know anyone at UCLA had beater cars. Like, every time I went to UCLA, everyone had like Escalades and shit. Like
when I was there, it was literally like Capone had an Escalade, Matt Barnes had an Escalade. I'm trying to think. TJ, but his pops had money, but TJ always had expeditions. I think I always had expeditions, but we were always like, and SC was like Scalabrini with Escalade, Jeff Trepanier with Escalade. So it'd just be like competing Escalades on 24s, matching through different spots.
See, no one tells you this when they're recruiting you. I could have gone to SC. UCLA already had their ship full basically when it was my time, but no one told me that I could have driven an Escalade if I went there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the best car at Berkeley was Joe Shipp had a Mustang. That was like a few years older. The rest of us had nothing. Y'all out here Escalades.
Hey, fuck Berkeley too, bro.
I'm supposed to tell you that, right? You're supposed to get the wink winks and the nudge nudges.
Hey, UCLA parking is whack, but Berkeley shit, bro. I remember I went to a game. I was just like, what the fuck is going on up here, dog? Where am I supposed to park at?
You're supposed to just get a ticket is what they want.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, damn, it's like, dude, where the you have a fucking building I can park in. I'll pay money for this shit. Like, where the fuck do you want me to park this car?
At Berkeley, and I love Berkeley, but it's designed to, like, be not user-friendly, like, almost on purpose. Like, I don't, maybe that's what's supposed to make it, like, such a hard school. Like, it's actually hard in other ways.
It's hard to just find shit.
Bro, I came back from, actually, right when I retired, my boy had a art show. He was on Coleman, and he was at UCLA. He was at UCLA grad school for art. And so we went down there, and that's the first time I saw, like, bird scooters. And I was like, if I had had these in college, I would have had a full grade point higher. Like, not as a joke.
No, that's it.
Just get from getting and up and down the hill at Berkeley,
bro,
where our dorms were to where the gym was like 2 miles downhill going there, but uphill on the way back. And they just expected us to walk that shit every goddamn day.
I literally flunked my first quarter at UCLA because on Friday they had a motherfucking 8 a.m. Discussion, but it was the same shit. Like, the dorms to where the class was. And, like, some days it'd be raining. It's like, motherfucker, I'm not leaving this fucking room to go walk 2 miles in this rain to go to this fucking bullshit-ass history class fucking discussion. Like,
of course.
I'm staying asleep, and then I got to go to the gym. And then the thing with us would always be trying to get a ride home from somebody up the hill.
Got
to
get some.
Older dude or whoever. Scooter. You see dudes in scooters.
I believe the name out of this one. But the first time, because they're at Berkeley, to get to Clark Kerr was the dorms we lived at as freshman athletes. So you had to take the number 7 bus, but it only came like once an hour. So, like, yeah, same as you. Try to get a ride home. Otherwise, you had to wait for the bus. And if it was raining, it was fucking trash.
Yeah.
So I get a ride home from this guy on my team who's a senior and a very good-looking dude.
Okay.
And the legend about this dude is that, like, literally he, like, women used to ask me, like, we heard he doesn't, like, kiss. He just, like, fucks. I was like, what? I'm like 17. I've like never done either, basically. I'm like, this question is way over my head. Like, I don't understand this.
Oh my God.
How does that even start? Like,
how does that rumor spread? About that shit about him?
Yeah, I'm like, man, I thought you were cute. I don't. So he gives me a ride home. And this is the first time we've ever like actually talked, basically. He gives me a ride back to the dorms and he drops me off and he goes, they used to call me Luda at the time. He's like, hey, Luda. Any of these hoes up here fucking?
Why did they call you Luda?
And I was just like, I don't know. They think you don't kiss is all I know, man.
I'm sure.
I think if I do find one, I hope she likes me, man.
I don't know. Like, I was told that you doing all of it, so you tell me. But like, I don't know.
The anatomy of how a rumor, how does a rumor start? He doesn't even kiss. Like, did he say that? And then that, I just wonder.
He probably was.
I remember before I got out of the car, I asked him for advice, and he was like, I was like, yeah, is there anything I should know about, like, college or, like, you know, what I should do to get on the team or whatever? And he's just like, always flush the condom. Because hoes be doing all sorts of tricky shit with that shit. I was like, again, I'm like, what is happening? I don't understand anything when I'm around you. This is too big for me.
What does that have to do with what you asked him?
That was his advice. And you want to hear something funny too? When I graduated, I started training up in Sacramento. God. And another name we won't say, but we both know this person very well. I asked him the same thing. I was like, hey man, I'm like, you know, like about to join the D League. Like, you know, is there any advice? You know, like, and he was just like, it's cheaper to keep her, dog.
Oh, my God.
That's the only two times I ever asked another Hooper for advice.
Oh, my God.
Those are the two bits of advice I got.
Oh, my Lord.
But honestly, both very meaningful and both very heartfelt. And I think things in college that you could definitely really take to heart and really, you know, institute.
Fucking funny, dog. That's the
shit I love. And people talk about hoops, like the games and all that shit was fine, but just the fucking personalities on the team. Like,
yeah,
I had a teammate, like, we had the big screen, we would watch game tape, right? But he would watch pornos on there, middle of the fucking day. You'd be coming into practice and a fucking porno. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Because at that time, you would need like the full DVD, also, right? You need the whole thing.
And it's like, what the fuck is going on? But this is just shit, like, you just never knew what was going to happen.
The coaches didn't care about that?
I mean, depending on how good you were, there was things this is the person, like, who's going to really tell them to fucking turn it off? Yeah. Like, it was, you know, I don't know what the gist of it was, but this is just shit you would see. And I'm just like, oh, shit, this is what college is like?
Y'all are different on the
way. All right, we'll start wrapping this up, but just what do you have coming up for you, man?
I'm working on a couple projects. I can't say any of them. They should be announced soon, but I've been out here getting it. I'm doing a show, Dunk Bait, on Yahoo Sports. Appreciate them for giving me a bag pre-White Guilt. This was even before White Guilt was entered. They were rocking with me, so I really roll with them, everything they got going on up there. But
you're supposed to hook me up with Yahoo, man. Shit.
I know, bro. We got to chat about it.
I used to work for Yahoo for like 5 years, but still.
I'd be forgetting.
You busy, man. You making money. I'm not mad at you.
I got kids.
You have two children, which is wild. I have zero.
We live a different life.
I don't even have like a puppy. Yeah, I make snap decisions all the time.
I don't even have a puppy.
Like, yeah, my decisions require like a month notice. And even then, like, all right, how are we going to structure this and what's cracking? Like, even coming to do this is like, all right, I'm going to be back by 4. Like, I'm leaving here, I'll be back, you know. And knowing, like, you know, if I don't, it's like, what were you doing? Like, what are you, like? I was over at Rod's mom on the podcast.
I'm literally like,
saying this shit right now.
I was literally thinking today, like, maybe I'll just go to Palm Springs tomorrow. I don't know. Like,
no, yeah. Just get that off. But honestly, I encourage people without kids, get that type of shit off. Because me and my boo will tell you, when you can't do all that type of shit, like, we can never be like, oh, let's go to Palm Springs tomorrow. Like, are you fucking shitting me? Like, we can leave at 10 and be back by 6. If we want. If you want to get it in, but.
You can never do that shit.
Like, who's going to come watch these kids? How much we got to pay them to do it? Like, that shit is a whole.
Where can people find you on the socials?
Twitter and Instagram at KingJosiah54. I was kind of doing TikTok, but the jury's still out on that. I don't know. I don't want my information disseminated in that fashion. My whereabouts, but my main bread and butter is Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, the king of NBA Twitter, they call him. Which is so wild. Like, you're just Josiah. Like, all these people who know you now, like, you're on like some podcasts, like people I do improv with, and I'm like, you guys don't know Josiah. I get jealous. Like, you don't know these fools.
The legends? But the young ones, like Carl and Jaquise and all that whole crew, I'm saying those dudes, like, I love those young dudes. I know y'all all in, like, the UCB world together, but go get your bread.
Yeah.
Y'all shows be killing. Go get this fucking money.
I think it's going to change. I don't know if it means getting
paid for
shows.
I went to that one
shows,
shit. That shit was killer. But just now go make some shit.
Yeah.
You guys have a unique perspective. Do a football or TV show.
Yeah.
You're black.
Yeah.
You know, do the black. what sport is it? Oh.
Chris, where do people find you, man?
At Dreddins, man. On Instagram, and that's about it.
That's Dreddins.
Yes, sir.
For the uninitiated.
Lemon pepper wet. Let's fucking
lemon get pepper wet.
Y'all need better go get a show. Stop fucking around. I'm telling you, bro. It's White Guilt about to dry up soon. Y'all better go get it. I got about 6 months. If you're black and you're an artist, you got about 6 months. I don't care what level you're at. Go ask for that promotion. Don't be nervous. What's the number? I think, before we leave, I just want to say one thing. We as black people, like, raise the number up. Like, don't ask for that basic ass number because you feel like you need to give back or whatever. Like, ask your white friends what they're charging.
Facts.
And just stick with it. Facts. And honestly, if you don't flinch because they're going to try and laugh or whatever, try to get the number down, no. I need that bag, my nigga. I know what you're paying. I know what you guys are paying. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Make your rate.
Shit, yeah.
I'm not doing no free. Oh, no. What?
Yeah.
I'm doing you a favor by even looking at this shit.
Need that Rosie Perez got them titties money.
For sure.
Rosie Perez, why are you doing this easy voice? Rosie Perez got them titties.
Got that titties money. Find me at Jerryon, Zsoryon on IG, or Boom Though on Twitter. We'll get you back. We'll talk.
For sure.
We could talk for hours about, especially this college hoop shit. We were going to do, well, at least we were thinking about doing a podcast a long time ago around these stories, but then you got all big time and shit. So
yeah, I became a celebrity.
Yeah. Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.